Morning, everybody. Can you throw me up? You've got a PowerPoint there that is a list of churches. You got that one there? You throw me that one? Don't know that I've ever actually done this publicly, but I have a little bit of an ulterior motive, but I just want you to, I have three ulterior motives, but that's a whole other thing. These are the churches of our association, and like I say, I don't know that we've ever thrown it on a list like this. When you read it in the bulletin, you usually get a feature that sort of highlights the churches for you to pray about, but don't know if in every case you know where they are, and just thought this would be a good thing to run through. I did replace the batteries, yeah. Our little church in Barrier, still struggling tremendously. Fire there a while ago, and obviously depressed economy. But we do continue to pray for them as they struggle. Maybe 15 people, something like that there. Right here, Westmount Church is our church plant in that area. Roger and Carrie Liegman are the church planters there at Westmount. And some of you may have been following that last summer, probably late August, could have been the beginning of September, they had a horrific rollover on the Coquihalla Highway. Roger and Carrie, Carrie does most of the preaching at the church, and so Roger says, thank goodness she only broke three ribs. So she was back in the saddle pretty quick. Roger broke a couple of vertebrae in his neck, broken arm, broken shoulder, broken leg, severe injuries that he's still recovering from. And it's been a hard process for them both. With all of that comes the inevitable question of, you know, here we are, Lord, and this happens to us. What are you trying to tell us? So we continue to pray for them as a pastoral group. When I go and do my cluster meetings once a month, they're constantly a prayer. And sadly, because of his injuries and his inability even to have a good night's sleep or even to lie horizontal, they can't come on our pastors and wives meetings coming up that we're leaving for, so they won't be able to join us. So continue to pray for the Liegmans at Westmount. You have Rose of Sharon that used to be in Richmond is out in Langley, actually Alder Grove. You've got the Grove, which is across the highway. Our One American Church is a little church in Oroville, just across the border from a Soyuz. Again, about 15 people in that church there. Fluctuates tremendously also with the migrant workers that come in and pick the orchards in the summertime. So as Mark often tells us, he can have his numbers can swell to 30 or 40 in the summer and then disappear down to 12 people through January and February. Those are the three in Prince George. Surrey, we have, there's at least three church plants associated with that church. And we are reaching out into Richmond to see if we can do a church plant there in the next year. And Paris, then our 1, 2, 3, 4, 6 Vancouver churches, including our new ethnic congregations, Acts 29, Faith Chinese, and Vancouver Zion. Church in Vernon, and that's the end of the letter. I show that to you, that is the BC Association of North American Baptist Churches, as we're called at the moment. And I do that because it's good for you to see that, like that. Also, in a little bit of humor, I did get somebody asking me in the new year whether we were still a Baptist church because we changed our name, to which my reply was, we are part of the Association of North American Baptist Churches, and one third of those churches do not have Baptist in their name. We're not the only people who've done that, right? And so what the name is irrelevant. It's who we are associated with. Those are our churches. Those are the pastors we meet with and pray for. That's what we oversee in our meetings. That's the executive that I'm a part of as we continue to push forward and do church planting in BC. Thanks, guys. You can start prepping, put the sermon up there for me. We are again, I am finally meeting. Thank you for those of you who continue to ask me how it's going with the school district. There was an army of people coming through this past week because the transfer did take place on the 17th, and so very quickly we were introduced to the new director of operations, the custodians, the outside gardeners, the roof maintenance. I mean, just everybody was swarming here last week. And I shook a lot of hands getting to know a lot of people as we start to develop a new relationship with the people that now are the ones that own this facility. Something is being written up. I don't have a contract yet. I expect that to be worked out in the next couple of weeks. There's a lot of things that are going to have to be done here. They have an enormous gymnasium that they're planning to build as well, because to run a school, and if you read your papers, it's going to be a fine arts school, it sounds like, is what they're going to do here, which means they have massive plans for this theater as a fine arts school. So this will become something very important to the school moving forward. From the back of this curtain out, they're going to blow all that up and build their gymnasium out that way. And right now they're negotiating with us and our building about whether we should do zero lot line from both buildings and come up with a central wall. All right, so that we're talking about. There might be some cost savings in building one wall. The other thing is that neither principal wants a 3-foot or 4-foot corridor, 100 feet long, between two buildings. There are some logistics that are being worked out. I think we're going to ride their coattails as well, because right now the process for getting permits is so ridiculously long. We really are starting to worry about when we can start this, and with the school district wanting to do it at the same time, perhaps their clout can help us to move a little faster as well. So those are all things still ahead. Continue to pray for us as we work all those things out. I'm in the book of 1 Peter. Said I was going to do some sermons in Peter, just because, for my own sake, I was really appreciating what was going on in the book of Peter, and some of the things that I was coming across as I was doing my own reading. One of the things that drew me to Peter, too, to the epistle of Peter, was the tremendous upheaval in Roman society because of the political and cultural climate of the time. Peter is writing this epistle somewhere around the mid-60s. In 64, Nero comes to power. And what was already tumultuous times for the Roman Empire, what was already a society that was crumbling from the inside because of corruption and because of immorality and because of the lack of ability that society had to really deal with all the various groups that coexisted under the Roman banner. Nero makes things infinitely worse. Whether or not he was certifiably crazy is a matter of debate, but he's not a man acting like normal statesmen should. And so when Nero comes on, the plot, the intrigue, there were a couple of attempts made on his life. He's the guy that he banned all the arts because he didn't find them comforting enough for himself. He's the guy that ran the Olympic Games and then entered every event and amazingly won every event in the Olympic Games that he called. Made himself, got number one in every race. Just amazing how that happened. Under the fear of beheading, a lot of athletes suddenly were much slower, much less strong than they were before. And so he's acting, and what happens is that an entire culture starts to become fixated on the leader. What happens is that an entire culture starts to hold its breath wondering what's going to happen next. There's a lot of uneasiness. There's a lot of tension. And as Peter is writing to Christians, he's writing into this environment of tremendous uncertainty. Stuff happening on the political scene every single week that is scary to the citizens involved. And so I was sort of rereading the history of the time. And as I sort of saw again what the people were dealing with, and then listening to what Peter had to say in that climate, it spoke to me all the more about the way that God has something to say to his people out of this, and something that I think is very valuable for us to catch on to. A few years after he came to power, you have about 64, you have the Great Fire. You remember the Great Fire of Rome, which again, although nobody knows for sure who said it, the suspicion is that Nero said it in order to incriminate Christians. They were the ones that were ultimately blamed for setting fire to the Capitol. The suspicion is that he wanted to burn down buildings because he wanted to build bigger and better ones in honor to himself. That's the suspicion. That's what most people believe happened. But ultimately, Christians were blamed, and some terrible things began to happen to Christians as they were rounded up, marched into the Colosseum, put to death in various cruel and unusual ways as Nero enjoyed the blood sport that came out of that. And then ultimately you have Peter himself being killed. History says he was crucified upside down because he requested not to be crucified right way up like his Lord. He didn't feel that was honoring to the Lord to be crucified in the same way. But somewhere around 68, you have Peter losing his life. And all this upheaval, of course, leads ultimately to the destruction of Jerusalem in AD 70. The city is surrounded, and you get the absolute destruction of that city. The order was that no boulder should exist that was larger than a person. Everything pounded into dust so that the Jews and their city would be eradicated from the face of the earth. Those are the times. That's the trouble that's brewing. That's the storm that the people can feel in their chests is around the corner. And it's that which lends Peter to write this great epistle of encouragement and hopefulness for his readers. And to have it preserved so that century after century, Christians who face this kind of climate time and time again as time has marched on, this epistle has meant so much to Christians who live in uncertain times, who live with the sense that something terrible is going to happen, some foreboding of the future, and it's not positive. And so at all times of human history, after that point, some great messages have been preached from 1 Peter that told the church to stand strong, to be faithful no matter what. When the going gets tough, no, it's not about your toughness. It's that people full of faith are called to endure. And so these sermons are helpful as we this morning get ready for the rough ride ahead. And as always, I know just from the way some of you commented to me last week about the sermon, I understand that that sometimes these sermons are very, very personal. That's one of the amazing things about sermons. I write them because it has something to say to me personally. And sometimes it's about our church. Sometimes it's about our culture. Sometimes it's about bigger events. But very often I know that some of you say, man, it's like you were talking to me. Well, don't give me that credit. I have no idea the kinds of dark stuff that some of you face and some of the trials and tribulations that you've chosen not to share or that cause you such pain. But God always knows. The Holy Spirit is always, always trying to talk to you through the Word of God. And if somehow my words help that process, praise God. That's super. This second message is as Peter challenges believers now in chapter 4, and I want to read this to you. He says, therefore, since Christ suffered in his body, arm yourselves also with the same attitude, because whoever suffers in the body is done with sin. As a result, they do not live the rest of their earthly lives for evil human desires, but rather for the will of God. For you've spent enough time in the past doing what pagans choose to do, living in debauchery and lust and drunkenness and orgies and carousing and detestable idolatry. And they're surprised that you do not join them in their reckless, wild living, and they heap abuse on you. But they will have to give an account to him who's ready to judge the living and the dead. For this is the reason the gospel was preached, even to those who are now dead, so that they might be judged according to human standards and according to the body, but live according to God in regards to the Spirit. The end of all things is near. Therefore, be alert and of sober mind so that you may pray. And above all, love each other deeply, because love covers over a multitude of sins. Offer hospitality to one another without grumbling. Each of you should use whatever gift you've received to serve others as faithful stewards of God's grace in its various forms. And if anyone speaks, they should do so as one who speaks the very words of God. And if anyone serves, they should do so with the strength that God provides, so that in all things God may be praised through Jesus Christ. To him be the glory and the power forever and ever. Amen. A couple of things I want to share with you this morning in terms of Peter talking to his audience and saying there are some very rough days ahead and you need to be prepared. Three things that I want to share with you as we go through these first 11 verses in chapter 4. Peter is asking us about how we prepare. Verse 1, and by the way, backtrack a little bit. I'm going to be talking about the mind, the heart, and the soul. And I don't want you to sit here this morning and decide whether you are tripartite or dipartite. I don't want this to be some sort of weird theological intercession in your head, whether you think all those three things are the same thing, whether you think there's two parts to the human nature or three. Please don't do that. And so what I've done is, in brackets, I've told you the way that I think about these things when I'm thinking about those three terms, and how that then becomes practical for me to make an application. If you want to argue tri and dipartite with me, let's do it over email. Agreed? All right? So for now, let's talk about these three things, and in brackets, I'll tell you how I think about these things. So preparing my mind, what I do is I say what and how I think. So one of the things that Peter is going to talk to us about is our minds. Therefore, since Christ has suffered in the flesh, arm yourselves with the same purpose, because he who has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin. Peter says a lot about purpose in his first letter. One of the things that he tries to do for people who are thinking through all the stuff that's happening around them is that it is not without purpose. He never wants Christians to believe that it's some sort of senseless act, that somebody has lost control, that the earth is spiraling out of control, and that God is nowhere to be found. And so, always, when he asks Christians to think through what's going on, he wants them to understand that there's purpose in this. It is not without purpose. Some of the things that he reminds us of in this first chapter. He says, your hard times are not just random events that occur in your life. They can serve a purpose if you allow them. By introducing the word purpose over and over and over again, he's saying to Christians, think about it. And as you think about it, I want you to do something about it. Don't just think negatively. Always think, what am I supposed to learn from this? What does this drive me to do? If my life is unstable, if our political atmosphere is in great upheaval, if culture is rejecting God outright, how am I supposed to think about that in my own head? How is that going to make me stronger, not weaker? What's the purpose in that? One of the things that happens is that as we endure suffering, we grow in strength. You see, in the past, my tendency is to give in to temptation, and it's based on the misconception that sin is stronger than me. That's often what happens when we first come to Christ, is that we find it very hard to change. And when somebody says to us, now you're a Christian, you should change thinking or change behavior, one of the things that hits us right away is, how in the world am I supposed to do that? This is who I am. This is how I think. This is how I've learned. This is the way I react. And so we often, as part of our immaturity, are baffled by how we're supposed to change. Why can't I control my temper? In fact, why do I try? Isn't that just me? Why can't I love somebody that I consider unlovable? Why do I have to do that? Aren't there other people that can do that? Why can't I consistently say no to pizza? Why do I even try? Right? The more we suffer, the more we wake it through hard times, the easier it is to say no to temptation. And so when we endure suffering, it begins to give us a sense of fearlessness. One of the strange things that we find in societies right now where the Christian church is driven underground by severe persecution is how it increases Christians' fearlessness. They actually get stronger. They're actually less afraid of the consequences of speaking for Christ. You've heard the verse, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. For some of us, those words would be a proclamation of faith. For others, as it was with Paul, these words were really a proclamation of his testimony. Paul wasn't merely talking about the future. He was actually talking about the past. He was saying, in effect, I've been through all kinds of good and bad in the past. And I know from experience that I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. It was part of his testimony. This is my testimony, Paul was saying, and because of that, I can face the future with confidence. I have learned that God is always with me. I have learned that God has not forsaken me. I have learned that I'm able to do things that I didn't think I could do when I step out in faith and do them, and God embraces me and helps me to accomplish the thing that I didn't think I could do. Paul says, I've got a track record of God being there for me. And so that causes him to then say, I can do all things through Christ. Do you see? It's not just some, gee, I hope one day I can do all things through Christ who will hopefully strengthen me. It's not some future hope. It's a guy who's walked the walk, and he says, you know what? God's there for me. Becomes a point of testimony. So when you and I endure suffering, it becomes our testimony as well. The more we endure, the more we understand how powerful God's presence is in our lives. Peter said, prepare your mind for suffering because this gives you power over sin. He who has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin, Peter says in a very strange way. And what he's not saying there that sin doesn't happen anymore. What he's saying is he who has suffered in the flesh has ceased to be controlled by sin. Suffering brings about the ability to say no to the things that ordinarily you wouldn't say no to. That's his point. I will not be surprised by suffering, is what Peter is trying to get Christians to understand. You're not going to be taken unawares by the suffering that's happening. Don't be surprised, Peter said. Beloved, do not be surprised at the fiery ordeal among you which comes upon you for your testing as though some strange thing were happening to you. But to the degree that you share the sufferings of Christ, keep on rejoicing so that also at the revelation of his glory you may rejoice with exultation. I always laugh at this. It's like somebody sitting you down and saying, you ran barefoot on the hot pavement and you're upset because your feet hurt. Right? You went out in a rainstorm, you're soaking wet and you don't have a change of clothes. And yet you chose to go out in the rainstorm. Peter takes a tone here with Christians and says, you continually continue to be blindsided by the actuality of the things that I'm sure you knew happened to Christians as well. You knew there was no immunity. You knew that life is hard for everybody. You knew that even if you've had peace for a while, eventually something occurs and it catches you and you think, oh my goodness, you know. Prepare your mind by saying, I will not be surprised by suffering. I'm just not going to take that attitude with God. If it happens to me, if things go wrong, there may be all kinds of things I need to say to God to unburden myself. But what I'm not going to say is, Lord, how dare you? Or, Lord, come on. I thought that shield that you put around every Christian was guaranteed to keep us suffering free for our whole lives. I'm not going to say anything stupid to God. Talks about preparing soul. When hard stuff is coming, he talks about preparing our soul. And the way that I deal with the concept of soul is that I ask myself, what do I contemplate deeply? What do I meditate on? What are things that I go to over and over again? That this is not just thinking. I think lots of thoughts, right? In a flash, I can say there was a woodpecker in my office this morning. I can say there was debris on the road as I drove towards the church. I can say 100 things that are part of the thoughts that are in my head. There's lots of thinking going on. I don't contemplate that stuff deeply. Until I just told you there was a woodpecker in my office, I'd forgotten about it. Now I remember it again. But it's, do I now have to go for a walk in the woods? Oh Lord, there was a woodpecker in my office. What does that mean? What significance does that have to my life? Right? No, I don't. I don't contemplate that stuff deeply at all. It's like the flavor of ice cream that I prefer. Right? Contemplation, soul stuff, is the stuff that you grab a cup of coffee, you stare out the window, and you go, oh, man. I don't understand, Lord. There's things about me I still don't understand. There's things about other people I don't understand. There's things about your world that I don't understand. There's things about my relationship with other people I don't understand. There's things that perplex me, bewilder me, frustrate me, haunt me. That's my contemplation. And Peter says you gotta prepare your soul for tough times as well. The end of all things is at hand, he said. And again, we read that and say, that's not true. Yeah, it was. Okay? The end of all things does not always mean the end of the world. And I can go into a long thing about how the word all does not always mean every single thing on the entire planet. Sometimes it just means all in my life, or all in my immediate vicinity, or all in my geographic area. So don't do the weird stuff. Okay? Don't look at that and go, oh, look, another guy with the sign, the end of the world is near, and look, we've lived another 2,000 years past that. See, it's wrong. In fact, for the Christians at that time, the way that AD 70 is just around the corner was horrific. That was the end of the world. For those people, the church thought that was the end. The Jews thought that was the end. One of the most horrific things that had happened. He says the end of all things, therefore be serious and discipline yourselves for the sake of your prayers. It's interesting that when he talks about our soul and he talks about contemplation, right away the get to is prayer. Huh? How I talk to God. And so I want to give you just a two-step plan here for improving your prayer life as you prepare for what's ahead. Number one, Peter just says, take it seriously, right? Realize when you talk to God, you're talking to the creator of the universe. Stop for a moment and think what an incredible privilege it is that you are talking to the creator of the universe. People love brushes with greatness. You know, running into celebrities or running into famous people. Oh my goodness. My mother now, who is reliving a lot of events of the past, there's sort of 15 to 20 things that she tells me every time I visit. And I would say 5 or 6 of them are brushes with greatness. You know, the time my father and her were in Moscow and Dad was preempted from preaching because Billy Graham was there. And Billy Graham came onto the platform and Dad was told, forget the hour, we don't want to listen to you for an hour, we have Billy Graham. So can you please just talk for 5 minutes, right? And that sense of, wow, we sat that close to Billy Graham. She remembers washing her hands in a, I'm not sure where they were, in one of the big manor houses in England, and they ran into Princess Diana's father. And they complained to him that there were no towels in the washroom because they didn't know who he was. And he stopped and chatted with them for 10 minutes. And oh, what a lovely man. And what a, right? But never forgotten, made a huge impact on my mother. Of all the 20 things that she now remembers and packages, so many of them are these run-ins with greatness. Well, each and every day, you and I get to talk to God. Do you fathom that? Or does that just become kind of like... I mean, is that awesome or what? You get to personally talk to God. He just says, just remember to take it seriously. And then he says, discipline yourself to consistent. There's a dailiness to it. There's a need to go back to the well over and over again. There's a satisfaction that comes from drinking deeply over and over and over and over again. And I know I said two. I got a bonus step for you. So it's really three. It's a funny thing is, Peter says, for it's time for judgment to begin with the household of God. He says that in verse 17, which is not part of our passage, but when I thought of that, it twigged something in me. It means that we need to take a hard look at ourselves. Part of contemplation is to consider yourself, your character, your actions, your reactions, your relationships, your goals. That's part of it. When Bob Dylan began writing protest songs in the 60s, he had a special name for them. He called them finger-pointing songs. Finger-pointing songs. There were songs in which he blasted the establishment for everything that was wrong. He spoke and sang and wrote with quite an air of superiority and a lot of judgment. You listen to those songs, there's a lot of that that comes out. I don't know how many of you remember, maybe I'm dating myself. And some Christians, and sometimes we as Christians, think that's what we're supposed to do. That somehow God has called us to be the finger pointers of this generation. That we're here to criticize every single wrong in the world. That we're to tell everybody how bad everything is all the time. And I get that too. Sometimes people say to me, you're the preacher. You're not telling us often enough how bad things are. Once in a while, I even get somebody saying, why don't you preach on sin more? I choose my words more carefully when someone comes at me like that. What I really want to say is, don't you ever listen? That's what I really want to say, but I try not to say that. Because we're really preaching sin every single week. We struggle with the sin of not doing good in so many different ways. But see, I suspect that's not what that person or those people really mean. When they say to me, why don't you preach against sin? They don't mean their own sin. They mean sins like abortion, homosexuality, MTV. See, we don't want to be challenged to face our own sin. We want to condemn the sin all around us. They just want to hear how wicked the rest of the world is. And Peter says, it's time for judgment to begin with the household of God, is what he says. That doesn't mean that we move from criticizing the world to criticizing the church. That's not what he meant. We're missing the point. He says it's important. He's saying to Christians, as this major upheaval is going on in society, as the culture is about to explode, as the empire is going to begin to totter, as it's rotting from the inside, as all this stuff is going to happen, as Jewish society is going to come to an end, as all this is going to take place, and the world is going to change like up to that point it had never changed before. As all that stuff is happening, he's saying to Christians, think about your own life and your own sinfulness. You need to take a long, hard look at yourself, Peter says. We need to be responsible for the way we're acting, the way we're talking, the way we're thinking, and what we're doing when there's chaos all around us. Prepare your soul in the way that you contemplate. I need to finish up this morning. Prepare your heart. And this is where I deal with emotions. When I think of that, and I understand how the Greeks thought differently than the Romans about the center of human emotions from head to heart. It's just practically for us this morning. Prepare your heart. What Peter says, above all, keep fervent in your love for one another, because love covers a multitude of sins. It's dealing with the way I feel and how I deal with my feelings. He's talking about how sin can affect relationships with others. And so as I'm thinking about that soulfully, he then says to me, prepare your heart. You see, when you love someone, you tend to overlook their sin. You're not as hard on it when you love someone. When you come alongside someone and you listen to whatever's going on and you recognize that there's sin there, or if someone does it for you, the way that someone comes into your life and helps you through it, the way someone exposes that sin, the way that someone encourages you to stop being sinful is very much part of the process of lovingness. Christian life is about compassion and mercy. It pleases God when we get along. Do you have kids? Many of you do. Does it make you happy when they get along? That's how God feels about us. And if we want to be ready for tough times, we need to practice the habit of loving others and loving each other. Peter is very, very practical on that point. And so he says to us, in terms of the practice of habit of loving others, hospitality is key. Be hospitable to one another without complaint. It's not just about hospitality, isn't just inviting people to your home. This is about going for coffee with somebody. This is about showing hospitality in any circumstance or situation where you're at. This is you providing for someone else's needs if you feel that you can. Serving one another. As each one has received a special gift, employed in serving one another as good stewards of the manifold grace of God. When Peter's talking about preparing your heart, he makes this very, very practical. This is not sticking your finger into your belly button, sitting alone by yourself in a forest and saying, I wish I felt better. Or I wish my feelings towards other people would change. The only thing you get out of that is lint removal. You see, Peter says, practice the habit of loving others. And then he's like, okay, let's be more hospitable. Let's serve one another. Let's do things for each other. Let's do things for our community. Let's use our time and our money and our giftedness to actually serve. And then he says, encourage one another. Whoever speaks, let him speak, as it were, the utterances of God. Speak. The New Living Translation says, are you called to be a speaker? Then speak as though God himself were speaking through you. That's how Peter gets people to be ready, how to prepare themselves, how to think through how they're going to stand in tough times. Here's how I put it together in a final thought. Suffering is inevitable and unavoidable. We must do what we can to prepare. This means that we need to prepare our minds. See suffering for what it can accomplish in our lives. We need to prepare our souls by getting serious about prayer and taking a long, hard look at our own spiritual lives. And we need to prepare our hearts by serving one another in love. That's what Peter was saying to his people as the upheaval and life around was becoming cataclysmic. As people were thinking, I don't know what's going to happen next. This is not good. How is this all going to end up? Where are we going as a society, as a culture, as a people, as a church? And in that situation, he said to Christians, time to shine. Be faithful, full of faith, full of faith. You don't know, say he knows. You don't understand, say he does. You're not sure what's going to happen, say he does. You don't know how it's all going to end up, you say, well, at least I know where I'm going to end up. Whatever it takes, but stand faithful. That's what he says. And be loving people while you do that. Don't become little Bob Dylan's. Let's bow in prayer. Father, a reminder again that whether it's in our personal lives and there's a lot of storms going on, whether it's some of the uneasiness we feel as a church when we think of what our future is and where we're going and how we're going to get there, whether it's to do with our culture or our country or countries around us or the world, you have solid advice for how you want Christians to react, how to be, and importantly, how to be with each other. And one of the things that we keep saying to each other, and one of the things that we keep asking ourselves as leadership here at Midtown is how do we not end up being like clanging cymbals? But how in the world do we draw people together so that they can be a real prayerful encouragement for each other? And so, Father, bless us as we continue to move forward. Help those of us who are in our own personal lives this morning are saying again, Lord, I am so up against it. I am so uneasy about my own future. I am so hurt by the stuff that has happened, by the stuff that I see coming down the road. There's personal stuff here that is just making me want to scream. Or if we're simply news hounds and we're watching the headlines. Father, bring us back to yourself this morning. Remind us, as Peter did, what a great God you are, and that you're a God with purpose, that everything you do is purposeful in our own lives and in the lives of nations, and that we can continue to bless you and bless each other. And when the darkness grows, the light can shine more brightly. That's not just some stupid, pithy, trivial little saying. Every time in human history that things have gotten black and horrible, when war has broken out, when there has been tremendous suffering, Christians have shone by holding to their faith, by acts of kindness to each other and to the world around, and by demonstrating that there is a joy and a peace and a love that nobody can ever take from them, no matter what's going on around. To that end, make us faithful. God's people said, Amen.